Hi again, everybody, and welcome to Facing the Pain. I'm Jeremy Lambert, and today we're going to discuss UFC Fight Night 103, featuring the return of the prodigy, BJ Penn. You know what? I meant to fuck that up on purpose, and I got it right.
That's a true Mike Goldberg right there. You can't even do fucking up correct.
I wanted to say the prodigy and the prodigy, and I ended up saying it correctly. So, yeah, we're off to a great start, as always.
I'd actually never seen that. Like, I've heard him say the prodigy during one of that highlight, Mike Goldberg video highlight on YouTube that we once posted on the podcast.
Right.
Not posted, played on the podcast. But when I sent you that, there's a 15-minute or maybe 12-minute Mike Goldberg best of. And best of is in between air brackets here, montage that I actually tweeted. So everybody follow me, SamerKatie88, and watch it. It's really great. It's a career retrospective on the departed, departing Mike Goldberg. He's still alive, thankfully. And I thought that might have been like an outtake or something. I honestly legit did not know it happened on the air. And Mike Goldberg, during some event, I don't know, might have been BJ's last fight, he goes, this card, which features the return of the prodigy, BJ Penn, and Rogan just starts cracking up. And I'd never seen that. When I heard that, I honestly haven't laughed that badly in a while. And I was like, all right, I'm texting it to you. Unfortunately, you had seen it, so...
you were like, did you get to the BJ Penn part? And I was like... Yeah, I've seen it. Like, what's so great about this? Why are you laughing so hard?
To me, that was revolutionary. Think of
the part that I texted you. The part that I texted you was the Portuguesa, because we had the discussion last week where you were like, is that a Mike Goldberg thing? Does he always do that? And I told you, yeah, dude, it happens all the time. And luckily...
Turns out he said it during his iconic exchange with Goldberg about that's Japanese brother, the whole, like, I wasn't aware because I read that exchange, but actually, or maybe I've even heard it, but didn't remember because there's a very famous exchange where Goldberg goes, you know, so-and-so's corner talking to him in Portuguese.
Portuguese.
I was going to get to that. And Rogan goes, that's Japanese brother. And Goldberg goes, I should have known that. And Rogan says, you're the one married to a Japanese chick. And they laugh. But apparently, the accurate notation, I guess, or annotation is his corner talking to him in Portuguesa. He legitimately said Portuguesa. Like, he was happy.
It's always the Portuguesa.
It is the Portuguesa. And he was so happy. Like, you can hear him just saying it in a way that goes like, oh, Portuguesa. And... Rogan going, that Japanese brother is the best. So, you texted me about that. You texted me about that. It takes a lot of energy to be a rock star. Props to whoever snuck that one in, by the way.
I love that quote. It's my favorite quote of all time.
Who's going to replace Mike Goldberg for this event?
I think this is John Anik. I probably would have been John Anik anyway, because it's a fight night.
Oh, it's a Fox card, right? Yeah. I'm actually interested in seeing the dynamic for Rogan and whoever replaces Goldberg for the next card.
Wait, the next UFC card, it's next weekend. Actually, it might be 2 weekends.
Number card, you mean?
No, Fox card. Fox card.
Oh, okay.
it's headlined by Valentina Shevchenko against Juliana Pena. What a shitty headline that is. No offense to those girls, but, like, that's a Fox headliner.
Oh, that's a... serious question. Is this fight any better? BJ Penn against...
No. I'm not saying this is good either, but remember when, like, the Fox deal was struck, it was, like, big headline fights, and now it's Valentina Shevchenko against Juliana Pena.
Because with the amount of events they're putting on and with how thin their roster is, you can't afford to have big headlining fights on Fox anymore because then your pay-per-views will suck. I mean, there's a reason they virtually created a whole new division, the women's 145 division, just to have like an okay main event, even though it's a kind of a crappy main event, to be honest. But hey, it's for a title fight.
Yeah, that's true. That's not until February, so that's still...
Yeah, but I mean, the idea, you get what I'm trying to say. Yeah, like, their roster is way too thin for them to put on any really big fights on card. And actually, like, throughout history, other than Velasquez and Dos Santos, which was the first card fight, which was a huge deal that lasted 64 seconds, it was way shorter than my breakdown and the 1 hour I spent talking about that fight. I'll never forget that. What really big, like, Fox main event has there been? Like, there have been a few good ones, but even later that year, like they've had Chael Sonnen against somebody, maybe Bisping. Like, that wasn't a good fight.
That wasn't the headliner, though.
The headliner was Rashad against somebody, right?
Rashad against Phil Davis, I believe.
Yeah. Like, even less than a year into the Fox deal, they had Shogun and Brandon Vera headlining an event. That was on Fox, I think.
Yeah, that was on Fox.
So, like, what are the really big fights they put on Fox? I think
Ben Henderson against Nate Diaz. That was the title fight. That was a big fight.
Okay, yeah, that was big.
Ben Henderson and Gilbert Melendez. That was a title fight as well.
Who? I don't know who that opponent is.
Gilbert Melendez, sorry.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Okay.
I think Demetrius Johnson defended his belt a few times.
Yeah, okay.
As well.
Okay. I mean, that is a big fight considering it's a title fight, but, you know, let's be serious.
They had Dos Anjos and Cerrone, like, last year. Like, that was a big fight.
Was that for the title?
Yeah, that was for the title.
Okay, so there have been more big fights than I thought, fair enough.
That was the end of 2015, December 2015, so not quite last year.
Can you find all the UFC on Fox main events?
Yeah, I'm looking at them right now. That's how I came up with it.
Can you name them chronologically?
Sure. So it started with, they've had 22 Fox cards.
Okay, so relatively there haven't been that many big main events compared to the amount of UFC on Fox cards they put on.
I'll name them in order. You tell me if they're big fights.
How did it start with Alexander?
I was about to name a big fight, but then I decided
Let's start. Yeah, Velasquez Dos Santos.
Velasquez Dos Santos, Evans and Davis. That was a number one contender fight.
Yeah, I think we have to be clear on what we call a big fight. Like, is Evans versus Davis a pay-per-view headliner at the time? Provided, like, okay, I'm sure there have been worse pay-per-view main events, even at the time, to be clear. But I'm talking about, like, events that aren't hampered by injury. Like, ideally, would the UFC want to put that on?
Rashad was still a draw at that point, though.
A name. Okay, I wouldn't say a draw. I would give that being a big... Like, look, I wish that's the quality of Fox main events we're getting now. So I will accept that as a very good main event. So, sure. 2 out of 2.
Nate Diaz against Jim Miller.
No. Like, that was a really fun fight, but both were just, like, at the time, just the exciting lightweights. That was a really great finish, remember? When Jim Miller almost bit his tongue.
He bit his tongue, yeah. Shogun against Vera. That wasn't the original main event, though, was it?
Yeah, I remember that. What was supposed to happen?
I'm looking at the page right now. Oh, the original main event wasn't much better. The original main event was supposed to be Brian Stann against Hector Lombard. That was Lombard's UFC debut. That's still a shitty main event.
Oh, I think Shogun had rejected Glover Teixeira or something at the time, or maybe that was a year later. No, might have been at that time. here we, or maybe I'm completely mistaken. I remember Dana threw Shogun under the bus for rejecting a Glover Teixeira fight. Might have been 2012 or 2013. I can't remember. But anyway, regardless, I wouldn't say that was a good fight. No.
No. Henderson and Diaz, yes.
Definitely.
Demetrius Johnson and John Dotson. I think you
that's
have
a title
to.
Fight. Yeah. You got it. Yeah, you got to give him a title fight. So that's four so far.
Henderson and Melendez, yes.
Sure.
Johnson and Moraga, another title fight.
Okay.
Johnson and Benavidez, two.
Oh, so they just, yeah, they just, that was actually, see, if they bothered to actually market Demetrius Johnson at the time being on Fox, maybe people would know who he is now.
Isn't this proof that, like, the Fox deal was fucked from the start?
Yes.
The fact that they had Demetrius Johnson headline 3 out of 4 events, and now he still can't draw, like, more than 150?
Yeah, because remember, I remember even writing a big article about it at the time. One of the major, well, at least in terms of the analysis at the time, the consensus was one of the major, major benefits of the Fox card is you're going to forget Dos Santos and Velasquez. That was the first fight they needed to start out with a bang. A heavyweight title fight was never going to be a consistent thing on Fox. But the idea was these really, really good fighters that people aren't aware who they are and they're not going to draw on pay-per-views, and especially the champions, the lighter weight classes champions, we're going to get the exposure they deserve on Fox. They were going to give them, you know, maybe primetime treatment or, like, whatever it is, hype packages they do for these events. And Fox were going to heavily promote them, and people are going to become aware of them. Granted, okay, even at the time, nobody was naive enough to think, okay, like, every single lighter weight class champion was going to all of a sudden turn into a draw. But the idea, and I still remember Demetrius Johnson was given as an example, maybe not in 2011 when the deal was signed, but definitely later on, like, he would be one of those fighters that would benefit the most from the Fox deal if it had been played right. Except they never bothered to act properly promote him. They never bothered to tell anybody who this guy really is. And they just, he was basically like, all right, you know, that's a title fight on Fox, whatever. Let's just make it happen. And nobody knows who this guy is, even though he is legitimately one of the best fighters in history, I think. Definitely, actually. And one of the most dominant champions there's ever been. Like, Demetrius Johnson is ridiculously good. And I would probably say the most underappreciated fighter in MMA history. Joe Rogan would say the top pound-for-pound fighter in MMA history. But, you know, Joe Rogan can be full of shit. But definitely the most underappreciated fighter in MMA history. Because even those that acknowledge how good Demetrius Johnson is, he never gets the acclaim and the praise when people talk about him. And we're all guilty of this. I'm not just saying people, like myself included, that some other fighters do. Some other fighters that have been maybe even less dominant than he was. Like, okay, a very topical example, BJ Penn. He's fighting on this card. Who has a better resume, BJ Penn or Demetrius Johnson? And I don't even think it's close.
No, Demetrius Johnson.
Like, by far. He's been a much, much better fighter in terms of results and accomplishments and consistency in his career. And I really don't think it's up for debate. Yet you hear how people would talk about BJ Penn. And first of all, the mere fact that they're aware of him is something. But on top of that, you compare it to the way people talk about Demetrius Johnson, and there's like a huge discrepancy. And it's truly unfair. I mean, we're getting sidelined here, but the idea that, yeah, this is a big answer to your question. Like, yes, the Fox deal has been a major boost.
Ben Henderson and Josh Thompson, that wasn't a title fight.
It was a good fight, though. I don't know if... Good fight. But the fact that it wasn't a title fight, I don't know, makes me...
Verdum and Travis Brown... Not a title fight either.
Yeah, no, whatever. Speaking of Travis Brown, I just learned today that Brandon Schaub used to date Ronda Rousey. I never knew that,
really?
By the way. Oh, you didn't know that either? I thought I was the only one. I looked it up, and apparently it was like common knowledge.
Well, she has a type.
Yep, crappy heavyweights.
Yeah.
There you go.
Garbage-ass heavyweights. Robbie Lawler and Matt Brown. Not a title fight.
Not a title fight, so. I mean, those are, again, compared to this, those are really good fights.
Junior Dos Santos and Stipe Miocic.
Was that a heavyweight title fight?
No, not a title fight.
No. But that's a good fight, though.
Gustafson and Johnson. That's why I was saying Alexander Gustafson earlier. Oh, okay. Like, that's another good fight.
That's a really good fight.
It's a lot of number one contender fights.
And that is cool. To be honest, that is cool. It's not quite what they hyped up at first.
And I honestly think Shevchenko and Pena is a number one contender fight as well. It's just...
Yeah, but...
Because Shevchenko fought Holly Holm on Fox not too... It was Holm's first fight after the Misha Tate loss. So, to continue, Machida against Rockhold, Dillashaw and Barao 2, that was a title fight. Dos Anjos and Cerrone 2, another title fight. Anthony Johnson and Ryan Bader, that's iffy.
Fuck that fight.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Glover Teixeira and Rashad Evans, that's extremely not good. But
yeah, that's a terrible fight.
I'm fairly certain that was... a late replacement fight.
Yeah, it has to be.
Oh, the original, like, the original fight was actually far, far, far worse.
What? What was the original fight?
Rashad Evans against Shogun in 2016.
Yeah, that's 5 years prior, and that's that fight was supposed to happen. So twice that fight was supposed to happen. Remember, they were supposed to fight for the title when
John Jones
caught to his knees in shock when he replaced Rashad. So that fight never materialized. 5 years in the making.
Strike while the iron's hot.
Yeah.
Holly Holm and Shevchenko, Carlos Condit and Damian Maia. I remember being so hyped for that fight, and it lasted like 2 minutes. I was pissed.
What happened?
Oh, Maia, like, immediately took him down and got him in a rear naked choke.
Oh, I don't remember that at all.
Oh,
Connor
yeah.
got submitted that quickly?
Oh, yeah, under 2 minutes. Like, it was amazing, honestly. Like, it's still amazing that Damian Maia can't get a fucking welterweight title shot. Like, I know they're going to do Tyron Woodley and Stephen Thompson, too. Maia has got to fight these guys. I really don't want Maia to fight and lose because he's like 37 or 38 now. Oh, he's 39.
This
geez.
Guy is amazingly consistent and good considering his limitations.
Yeah.
I really like Damian Maia.
Yeah, I want to see... He hasn't lost at welterweight. Like, this is why I want to see him... or maybe he has. Yeah, he lost to...
He moved.
Split decision to Jake Shields, and then he lost to Rory McDonald. That Rory McDonald fight was really good, though. I remember that. And the Jake Shields fight probably could have gone either way.
The fight was terrible.
Yeah.
Though, then again, Damian Maia versus Jake Shields stylistically sounds like an awful fight. Because I actually remember that. I remember, like, the UFC thought or hyped it up to be a grappling clinic. And that's not what happens when two fighters like that fight. You know what I mean? Like... They're not going to trade scrambles on the ground or anything, especially with Jake Shields being such a top heavy. Like, his grappling is so top heavy and top based. Unlike most jiu-jitsu fighters who, in the words of Mike Goldberg, are not used to being on top.
Yeah, they're not comfortable being on top.
But, like, everybody knew that this fight would either be, like, a terrible striking battle, which I think to an extent it was, if my memory serves me correctly, or, like, somebody would get top position but would struggle to sort of really make inroads there. But I just find this funny.
And Paige VanZant and Michelle Waterson was the most recent UFC on Fox card. Part of the best-looking UFC on Fox card in history.
You're not giving that one a rest, are you?
And then, yeah, Valentina Shevchenko and Juliana Pena as the next one.
So, in hindsight, when we look back at these main events, I think the bigger issue is not always the quality, because a lot of these fights... Okay, it's not just huge fights all the time. Most of the time, they're not huge fights, actually. I would argue there was one legitimately huge fight, and that's fine. their model is pay-per-view based, so you keep those fights for pay-per-view. But there were some big fights, some good title fights. The problem for the most part has been promotion and how UFC on Fox cards became just throwaway cards. Like at this point they're no different to the UFC on FX cards or whatever. But do they still put those on, by the way?
No, UFC on FX? It's all Fox Sports now.
Oh, okay, yeah. But remember back in the day, like UFC on FX cards were like sort of like the inferior throwaway card in terms of quality, where you put on just a bunch of exciting fighters but that aren't really names. So yeah, UFC on Fox could have been a much bigger deal than it ended up being. But like a lot of UFC things, that's the thing with the UFC, they haven't evolved one bit. They've been following the same formula for years. And in spite of all or some of the added exposure, they've really failed to capitalize as much as they should have. And everything else that they claimed would be a big deal, like international expansion and shit like that, turned out to be
world fucking domination.
Turned out to be completely futile and worthless, honestly. Like, these international cards, remember there was a time where, like, every card was an international card? I don't even know if they're still doing that. But I think
they're canceling shows in the U.S. now because they can't get a halfway decent card put together that's going to draw. They legitimately just canceled a show in March. I don't know what was supposed to headline the event, but they canceled one in Canada that was supposed to take place. They've canceled a lot of shows, it feels like, because, March 3rd in Las Vegas, they were supposed to have a show, and they, I guess, couldn't get anything together for it. It's already their second canceled show of the year.
Sports killers, the lot of them. it's hard to talk about any of the failed UFC projects without mentioning the Reebok deal, because that's, you know, that's the 5-year deal.
It's a 5-year deal. We still got like three, four more years of this.
Yep.
They got colors now, at least. You can pick from red, yellow, green, or blue. I'm fairly certain those are the only colors you can pick from.
Think about that. Think about how dumb that is. I don't think I've seen a major deal in any avenue, sports or otherwise, that took such obvious step backwards and is just completely inexplicable. Since day one, it sounded like a terrible idea. That's the thing. It's not like the Fox deal. The Fox deal, it turned out to be a missed opportunity, but, you know, that was due to mismanagement, to lack of good promotion, whatever. But in theory, at first, it was a very good idea. I still argue, like, for the most part, it might have, I mean, it's hard to say it's a complete failure. It's just like a big, so maybe bust is an overstatement, but it was a complete missed opportunity. But the Reebok deal is just incompetence all around, including from Reebok's end. And it turned out to be a train wreck, a complete disaster in the world, in the words of your president-elect. The worst ever. Seriously, if Trump wants to talk about a deal being the worst ever and a disaster, the Reebok deal is it.
Yeah, the Reebok deal. It was bad from the start. I remember writing that column and everybody was like, no, it hasn't even played out yet. Like, that, I always hate that, is let's see how it plays out.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's fine. Like, I understand that. And if I was wrong, I have no problem admitting that I'm wrong. But you can see things. You know what I mean?
The like, signs
you,
are there.
Yeah, you don't have to. You don't have to be a genius to just recognize things that, all right, the fight, it's a 5-year, it was like for $75 million or something. It's a 5-year deal for $75 million, and you have like 200 fighters that are going to get this. Like, the money just clearly isn't there.
Like, the math just didn't add up. Like, the math alone made it just
Yeah, the fact that like NBA players, like one single NBA player, they're signing shoe deals, they're signing 5-year deals for like $100 million, and that's one guy getting all this money. Like, you're trying to split up $75 million over 5 years for 150 fighters.
You're looking at this short-sightedly, though. It's not all about the cash. They're paying them in clothing. They're paying them in socks, shoes. You gotta appreciate that.
They're getting every fucking penny.
Every fucking penny is my favorite Dana quote.
every fucking penny. And the whole, like, it took a while to come to fruition. And then it comes, and it's, here's your choices. You get black or you get white.
And on top of that, black and white was so fantastic.
And the fighters, it wasn't like, all right, this corner gets black, this corner gets white. It's take your pick, black or white. And so most fighters would just fucking wear black. So you got two guys who look identical wearing both black Reebok, yeah, virtually identical, wearing black Reebok gear. And it's like, which one of these dudes is which? I remember watching events with Jess, and Jess goes, which one is which? They look the same to me with their fucking gear, and you know, it's an MMA fighter. They got their Nazi haircuts and their Nazi tattoos. What was the quote? The Bob Arum quote? They all look like skinheads.
Homosexual skinheads.
Yeah. So they all look the same, and it's like, geez. But then they added color. So,
dude, think about it seriously. Way to kill the diversity, the identity of the fighters. Like, I'll never forget. Remember when I was watching, because I stopped watching for a while, and then I was watching an Anderson Silva fight, and I was talking to you at the same time. Remember what was the first thing that struck
fight.
Me?
It was the Bisbee
yeah,
fight.
Yeah, like, where the fuck are the yellow trunks? Yeah. Like, it's the spider. Black and yellow, the greatest fighter of all time. Look, it's Anderson Silva. Fucking DMX hits, Ain't No Sunshine. A guy walks out looking chill as fuck, about to kill you. Like, just hugs his corner very affectionately. Walks into the cage super relaxed with the black and yellow trunks and kills you. That's Anderson Silva. And then it's like this dude wearing white and black trunks. And it's like, you just killed one of the most iconic, how to put it? They're the most iconic trunks in MMA, right? Other than GSP's tight ass. But other than that, like, seriously, the Anderson Silva black and yellow trunks are like, there's nothing more recognizable
those
in MMA.
And
back in the day, Chuck's.
Yeah, I was going to say, the Chuck, the blue and white ice trunks were pretty recognizable.
So imagine Chuck Liddell having to wear like the shitty white or black trunks. Like, that, it really is dumb. I don't understand who thought that could have been a good idea, and I don't understand the rationale. And I don't know why this pisses me off so much, but it really does. And on top of all of that, the fuck-ups, of course. So Anderson Aldo. Like, and even though it gave us a great segment on this this podcast where we came up with hybrids, including Matt, what did you call him? Matt Weidman.
Yeah, Matt Weidman. So, the All-American Hammer.
Oh yeah, I remember I came up with the nicknames the next day. I had one for George St. Pierre and somebody. I don't remember.
Oh God,
the rushing Scarface.
Yeah, rushing Scarface. That
and
one.
And the
was
Spider
good.
Bones. The Spider Bones is legit though. That's one hell of a fighter. And Gibbler Melendez obviously is something else. I'm not fucking up the Irish
the fighters got pissed and they were like, you misspelled my name, or I don't go by. Remember they would call like a Matt like Matthew, and like no one fucking calls me Matthew. CM Punk's was Phil Brooks, and he got pissed about that, of course.
I really don't think this is even an exaggeration. I don't think there's a better element that captures the overall incompetence and mismanagement than the whole Reebok deal.
Do you notice, like, I guarantee, if you've seen anyone on the fucking streets wearing a Reebok shirt, a Reebok kit, then slap them. But even at MMA events, remember, you would notice, like, all these douchebags with Affliction shirts and everything.
Yeah, Affliction,
like,
shirts.
I really don't even see people, like, wearing these Reebok shirts at MMA events.
Yeah, because you know why? Affliction shirts, as terrible as they are, they were unique enough to appeal to some people. You know what I mean? Like, they had a very they had a certain style, like, in terms of the patterns, the designs, the drawings. You could tell an Affliction shirt when you see one, which isn't always a good thing. In fact, it's almost never a good thing. But at least they had their own identity, and it was working. So it appealed to douchebags. Reebok doesn't appeal to anybody.
I remember when people – I mean, Dana always used the argument, like, oh, we're a team sport now. It's like – it's like supporting your team when you go out and get a fighter kit.
Oh, I remember that.
I have my favorite fighters, but – and I have, like, walkout shirts. Like, I have a Chuck Liddell from UFC 115. Like, that was a badass walkout shirt. So I have that shirt, and I have a couple – I have an Anderson Silva one as well. And they're cool because they are unique, but I'm not going to spend money – but they were also only like $20-$30. These Reebok kits are like $75. I'm not spending $75 on a fighter who fights like two times a year and that's it. You know, you spend money on a team jersey and you're supporting that team theoretically for the rest of your life. Players change, but that's why you just get your name on the back of the jersey, or you just get a blank jersey. But even if players change, if you have an all-time favorite player, like, you still get that jersey of that player.
Yeah.
But with fighters, I don't know. It just felt weird buying a Reebok shirt with a fighter's name on the back of it when, again, he only fights a couple times a year, and MMA is such an irrelevant sport anyway, to where you're going to walk down the street wearing that, and people are going to be like, what in the fuck are you wearing? You know what I mean? There's no, like, logo.
Look.
That's the appeal of team jerseys, is a recognizable logo. Like, all right, maybe you don't know the player name on the back, but you recognize the logo.
I'll give you a better example.
All right.
Because I disagree with Dana about, you know, MMA is a team sport, which is why I don't even like the analogy to NBA, to sports teams. Although you're only basing this on what Dana said, so I understand. But what model do you think is closest to the UFC's model?
Probably pro wrestling.
Exactly. Look at how much better WWE do shirts.
I think most of their shirts kind of are trash. A lot of them, but...
And they're so way better. Like, at least they've made... I'm talking about back... Honestly, when I'm talking about this, I'm thinking about the...
Yeah, back in the day. Yeah, the Austin, the Rock.
I don't follow wrestling.
NWO
now, so
shirts.
I don't know what... You know, like a Dolph Ziggler shirt or some shit like that, or Roman Reigns. Like, okay, no, nobody wants that.
I got an AJ Styles shirt that I'm pretty happy with.
Well, who's that?
AJ Styles.
Oh, AJ Styles. Yeah. Well, I mean, because he's one of the few cool professional wrestlers right now.
I got a couple of John Cena shirts.
Of course, because you're a homosexual skinhead. But, like, you know, the really iconic wrestling shirts back in the day. Like, UFC have failed to produce even one. And I understand that, okay, UFC is a legitimate sport, blah, blah, blah. Maybe their effort, you know, it shouldn't be as concentrated on marketing their fighters to that extent, especially because in WWE, their wrestlers are appearing on a weekly basis, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean... Still, in UFC's whole existence, there hasn't been, like, one product that would make you go, like, oh, yeah, this is wrecking. Like, everybody knows what that is. Like, you know what I mean? Like a Rock Just Bring It shirt, or, like, an Austin 316, whatever, with the skulls and shit.
Yeah, there's no creativity with any of this.
Yeah, there's zero creativity.
It's just a guy's name on the back of a shirt.
And most of the time, spelled wrong. Like, okay, so at least now with the Reebok thing, that pisses me off. The production values as well, and their inability to differentiate. We talked about this before. The one time they tried to differentiate an event was UFC 200 and ended up looking like a cage rage event. The one that still pisses me off the most was UFC in Toronto in 2011 because that was a huge-ass show. They had like 59,000 people.
They did good with what was the original Connor and Aldo card that turned out to be Connor and Mendez. Remember they had the live singers doing the intros for Mendez and like they had Sinead O'Connor for Conor McGregor walking out. I think it was Sinead O'Connor. But yeah, they had live performances to walk them out. And like that was really special. And I remember Dana, which is complete and utter bullshit, because it was supposed to be Aldo and Conor, and you know Aldo's walkout song, right? Like it's the same song every time. It's Jay-Z, Kanye West, and Rihanna. And Dana's like, yeah, we were going to get them if Aldo was here to perform his walkout song.
Sure. I'm sure you were.
Yeah. So they did good differentiating that card just because they had the live walkouts. But yeah, we've talked about it before. Like the arena, they all look the same. Like Madison Square Garden.
They can't even capture the crowd noise.
Yeah.
Unless it's in Japan because there is no crowd noise. But that's the part that like pisses me off the most. It's, I don't know, the UFC. Just the idea that they've been doing this for so long and yet they're still so inept at it pisses me off. Why are we even talking about this?
Well, we'll preview this card here in a bit because we'll transition into, is MMA an art?
Oh, fuck out of here, dude. That boy, you know what? I didn't even read her comments. So what did Meryl Streep say?
So she just basically said it was a rant against Donald Trump, and she talked about how Hollywood is so diverse and everything. It was very self-congratulatory towards Hollywood, which is what all these award shows are anyway. And she just said, you know, so-and-so's from here and this person from here. So if you get rid of all of us, then you're not going to have movies, television, music. You're not going to have the arts. You're going to be stuck with football and mixed martial arts, which are not the arts, is what she said. That was our whole
thing.
I think
MMA should just be happy that they've gotten a shout-out, even though it wasn't much of a shout-out. They just got their name dropped in a speech like that by one of the greatest actresses of all time. Like, just
overrated.
Just be happy and shut up. What's that?
Overrated.
I've never liked any of her movies, but, I mean...
No, that's what Donald Trump said.
Oh, Trump said. Yeah. You know what? You should give Trump a chance. Just wait for it to be... Wait for his presidency to play out. Don't... jump to conclusions ahead of time.
We watched his press conference on Tuesday, I guess it was.
Oh, that was so fantastic.
Oh, my God. This is, of course...
The with the CNN reporter.
That was the fucking best. I was cracking up so hard during that. He's like, no, you can't ask a question. Don't be rude. Don't be rude.
Don't be rude is my favorite part of the whole thing. I think Trump's delivery, and honestly, the way his lips look when he's mad is like the shapes he makes with his mouth and the faces and all are what makes it so hilarious. Just because he looks like a giant clown. I don't know. It's just hilarious. Did you read the rumors about his Russian golden shower fetish?
Yes. He's a germaphobe and he hates tiny cameras, okay? So obviously nothing happened.
How is that guy a president? Like, he's hilarious. I'm not going to deny that. But how is that guy a president?
The best thing was he ended his press conference with, you're fired. So he got in his catchphrase at the end of this presidential address.
He's a performer. Like, Donald Trump is just, you know what I mean? Like, he's an entertainer. He's a performer. He's a reality star.
Well, like, he's also our president in a week.
It's insane. Honestly, the closer it's getting and the more you see. It really is weird that, like, it's not weird, but it's like, almost surreal that all this has happened and he's not officially the president yet. So think about what's going to go on for the next 4 years.
I'm scared out of my mind. I really wanted to text you during that press conference and be like, dude, it's getting closer and this is going to be a reality and I'm so scared.
Feels good to be Canadian / Middle Eastern.
It's something.
Words never uttered by anybody ever yet.
So Meryl Streep, she said that, and then, of course, MMA fans got defensive.
My Twitter feed was blowing up. I woke up the next morning and the while you were away thing.
Yeah.
And every tweet was about that. And I was like, what the fuck is going on?
When I watched it and she said it, like, I think I immediately tweeted, can't wait for the MMA hot takes on Meryl Streep, because you knew it was coming just because of how sensitive MMA fans are.
Right.
And yeah, they were glorious, honestly.
Joe Rogan
buried her. Dana White buried her. Scott Coker invited her to see Tito against Chael, which...
Because if you want to change somebody's thoughts about MMA, that's the fight for you. You know what's hilarious? I read that Dana White called her comments ignorant. The same guy that said that soccer is the least talented sport in the world because the goal is so huge a bunch of three-year-olds can score. Do you know how untalented do you have to be to play soccer? That is a direct quote. The same guy that said MMA is going to be bigger than soccer is calling other people out for being ignorant about MMA.
I didn't see it as a big deal. It was...
It really... Dude, it is not a big deal. What the fuck? So, Meryl Streep doesn't like MMA. How old is Meryl Streep?
82? Something like that?
Okay.
An uppity 80-year-old is what Dana said.
Uppity, yeah. Dana White. So an 80-something-year-old Hollywood actress.
She's actually only 67. She's not even 80s. We're sorry, so we're Streep.
Very
we're
close within
off.
The ballpark.
Yeah.
Okay, so speaking of ignorance, he's been around forever, though. Like, I thought 82 was a bit high, but she's not even in her 70s? That's insane. Anyway, good for her. So... An oldish Hollywood actress is not a fan of MMA. Alert the media. What's the big deal? Seriously.
It's not an art. That's why people are offended. She said MMA is not an art.
When she watches Tito versus Chael, she's going to see the true artsy side of MMA. Because that's going to be a picture is going to be painted with blood, sweat and tears. It is art.
She should just watch a Ronda Rousey highlight video of her shadow boxing. And how could she not think that is art? That is poetry in motion, Ronda Rousey shadow boxing.
Ronda Rousey shadow boxing is one of MMA's greatest gems. Aside from Edmund yelling no, I saw a video of him yelling no. Did you see the footage?
The behind the scenes footage where they had the camera on him. It was great.
So fantastic. The closest thing to art in MMA is Brittany Palmer's drawings. She's a renowned, world-renowned artist. Remember that?
Yeah.
I missed the Ariani Ronda Rousey feud.
Ariani got the last laugh. She lasted longer.
Good point. Who has Ariani dated? There was a fighter that
Josh
was...
Josh Berkman.
Tiki? Tiki date Ariani?
Yeah.
So who has a shittier history of dating? Brittany Palmer, Ronda Rousey, or Ariani? Brittany Palmer dated Cerrone and Pettis?
Did she date Pettis?
She dated Cerrone and some other WEC guy. Hold on. Did she date Pettis? Look that up.
I am.
Who did she date in WEC other than Cerrone? Like, that's really famous.
I have no clue. I only remember Cerrone. This is great research right here.
If you want to determine if MMA is an art, that's the sort of info you need to gather.
I don't know. I'm only getting Cerrone. I'm not getting anybody else.
Oh, okay.
So
Arianes dated Tiki, and somebody else was like really terrible.
Josh Berkman.
Oh yeah, Jesus, that guy is still around, right?
He is. I think we talked about him recently because he was fighting.
I would still have to go with Ronda having the shittiest history, especially considering she's still dating Travis Brown.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, we have a card to preview.
Yeah, let's do this. Yair Rodriguez against BJ Penn, the return of the Prodigy.
You mean Prodigy?
I don't think Yair Rodriguez is that great, but he's got to fucking beat BJ Penn, right?
Yeah. Look, I don't understand why is BJ Penn fighting. That's number one. Truly, I don't. What weight class is this, so we're clear?
It is at featherweight.
Okay, even better. I don't understand why BJ Penn is fighting at featherweight.
BJ Penn hasn't won a fight since 2010.
Was that Matt Hughes?
Yeah, that was the Matt Hughes fight.
So he hasn't beaten somebody good.
His last good win was December 2009 against Diego.
Diego Sanchez.
Yeah.
That's... And with no disrespect to Matt Hughes, but beating Matt Hughes in 2010, like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, that was a wave shot, Matt Hughes.
Yeah. Pretty sure it was like a very early knockout to...
Yeah, it was like 20 seconds in. It was
2 seconds, yeah.
Yeah.
Look, I don't know why BJ Penn is fighting.
Because he just wants to go down as the best ever. Is that too much to ask?
You keep bringing up BJ quotes that I've completely forgotten about. I remember you brought up to the death a while ago.
To the and death? I won't stop. I promise you.
I'm going to go in there and I'm going to try to kill you. And I'm not joking about this.
Yeah.
That was the exact quote. BJ Penn, yeah, what, even though he was once, say it with me.
The best fighter based on skill.
The best fighter in the world based on skill, indeed. Described by one idiot on this podcast, I'm gonna keep making that same joke every time I bring that up.
That's fine, I don't care.
You deserve it.
Remember when BJ Penn was supposed to destroy Nick Diaz?
Oh, you're... Okay. Touché. Touché. I was way more unbearable about that than you were. You see, the one time in my life I was complimentary towards BJ Penn, that's what I get.
Yeah. Seriously, you were BJ so... Who did we have on the podcast to...
Butterfield.
Yeah, Butterfield was picking Diaz and you were picking Penn. And I remember...
you hosted a debate between Butterfield and I.
Yeah, the embrace debate. And I remember talking to you after the show, and you're like, I didn't want to be disrespectful because I like Butterfield, but he was just wrong. BJ Penn's going to murder this guy.
I don't understand what got into me. I was so adamant about that. I truly saw it as my next Velasquez-Lesnar moment because that was the time I was very sure. I remember, I still remember the fights where I called everybody an idiot for thinking they'd be close ahead of time. I remember Machida Couture was definitely one. I was unbearable about that. Velasquez-Lesnar was definitely one. It was like my ballsiest pick because I was like Velasquez is going to kill him. And there's one that involves St. Pierre, I think. But I don't remember which one, and maybe some maybe one more fight because I clearly think there's one more, and I was right about all of those, but Jesus, this one kind of like erases, like, you know, they cancel each other out. Like every pick that I was right about is erased by this because I remember the fight was announced months in advance. I went, well, maybe not months, but whenever it was announced, I went, like, I tweeted, BJ Penn is going to outclass Nick Diaz. And one of the 411 writers, I don't remember who it was, responded like in every facet of the game. And I was like, I even tweeted back, like, I was like, I don't think people understand how uncompetitive this fight is going to be. For some reason, I still fail to understand why or how. I was just sure BJ Penn is going to, like, completely outclass him. Like this is not even close. Like, Nick Diaz is not even going to touch him. And, yeah, he touched him a lot. Like, really a lot.
He made BJ Penn look old and slow and silly.
I remember BJ won the first round.
Yeah, he won the first round.
And I wasn't very happy. I just remember, like, yeah, that's a little too close for comfort. And he looks like, this motherfucker looks like he's slowing down. And that was one of my things, is like, because Butterfield was saying, like, BJ's going to slow down, especially at welterweight, whatever. I was like, no. This shows the complete lack of understanding of BJ. BJ doesn't just slow down because he's out of shape or whatever. This is such a false narrative. BJ slows down when he gets hit. And, well, he got hit a lot, and he slowed down. So, yeah, that almost completely killed my credibility. And I only say almost to say face. Yeah, that was not my my brightest moment, I don't think. Moral of the story, never pick BJ Penn to win a fight. Was that worse than calling BJ the best fighter in the world on a card he shared with Anderson Silva in 2010? Maybe because you made like an offhand comment. It's not like you
went
on.
Yeah, I just said it's. Yeah, it was a throwaway line that I used. I wasn't, you know.
Yeah, you didn't go out, like, you didn't write a column called, like, the cardio freak, why BJ Penn is the best fighter in the world based on skill.
Right.
Yeah, you should have, though. It would have been more memorable. So, yeah. BJ Penn. Obviously, he's going to lose this fight. Like, there's not much to discuss. Just a quick few words about the fight before I talk just a bit about BJ. I watched Rodriguez against Alex Caceres, who's no longer the worst fighter in the world based on skill. And I wasn't too impressed. He throws a lot of spinning shit. He throws a lot of kicks.
Yeah, he definitely throws a lot of unconventional stuff.
Yeah, like, his offense is way more flash than substance. We kind of talked about it. We alluded to this when we talked about Anthony Pettis, about how it's always a bit risky when the foundation of your offense is like, flashy high-risk strikes, but there's little fundamentals behind them. And that's sort of what I get with Rodriguez. Like, he's good at overwhelming you in that sense. The fact that it was a split decision is complete bullshit, by the way. Like, I was shocked when because I was expecting, like, I looked at the result before I watched the fight, and now I was watching the fight, and I was like, wait, what? How was that a split decision? I'm pretty sure I had Rodriguez winning four rounds out of five. Granted, like, after a certain point, I wasn't paying too much attention, but still, that was complete bullshit. Anyway, yeah, he throws a lot of body kicks. He throws a lot of flashy stuff as well. His offense is very kick-heavy. His boxing is, whatever. The problem is, like, yeah, in his prime, BJ had one of the greatest chins MMA's ever seen. I still don't remember ever seeing him get knocked down. Maybe in his like, fights after he got washed up, maybe. What happened during these fights? I don't remember. Did he get, like, just crushed?
Yeah, Frankie Edgar destroyed him. I actually don't think Roy McDonald knocked him down. He just beat him up for 15 minutes. But Edgar, yeah, I don't remember if he got officially knocked down, because I think Edgar more took him down than knocked him down, but he beat the shit out of him way worse.
Oh, yeah, like, BJ getting beat, like, beat up on the ground, we've seen that before. Even in his prime, it happened. But in France, there was only, like, one guy. Yeah, there's the Matt Hughes fight, the second one, where BJ allegedly hurt his rib. Matt Hughes took him down, got him in a crucifix. But other than that, like, George St. Pierre was the only one that really, like, put it on him. But then it went south, though, with the Diaz fight, and he became a punching bag. Even when Edgar – I mean, the first Edgar fight was an absolute robbery. But the second one, even though Edgar dominated, he didn't necessarily beat him up.
Did he really dominate? I didn't think Frankie had – that cocksucker had anything on him.
Well played. Damn, that threw me off. That's one of my favorite cornering moments ever. Joe Rogan's disgust while talking about that moment, because you know Joe Rogan, like, he used to love him some BJ Penn. And, after the fourth round, BJ's corner saying, BJ, that cocksucker has nothing on you. Like, Joe Rogan repeated that. Maybe he didn't mention the swear word. I don't know. But he basically, like, repeated it with disgust. Like, this isn't the kind of advice he needs, blah, blah, blah. Like, he was really – could see how emo he was. Even though in the first fight, actually – I mean, I'd watched it live. I was in the arena. But when I rewatched it, Joe Rogan was completely on Team Frankie once Frankie started doing well, because that's what Joe Rogan always does whenever an underdog kind of like exceeds expectations in his performance. He naturally gets carried away and starts overselling everything they're doing. Remember how badly Mark Hominick was beating up Jose Aldo in that round? Every punch on the ground was, ow, he hurt him.
Kenny Florian is a three-time champion, according to Joe Rogan.
Wait, what?
Kenny Florian, didn't he beat Aldo? And
oh, dude, Kenny Florian. Oh, yeah, I get it. Oh, the Aldo-Florian fight is the worst. I think it's in terms of maybe Edgar Aldo won. I think that might have been Joe Rogan's worst performance ever in terms of completely really, really swaying things in a fighter's favor, especially because I didn't think that fight was even close. But Kenny Florian and Aldo, yeah, that fight – it's really, I've completely forgotten, actually. All I remember from that fight was the comment about, you know, the fourth leg kick killing you and stuff. But I'd completely forgotten about Rogan's performance in that fight. Good call. You're reminding me of a lot of stuff this podcast. Actually, one fight I would also mention, even though I do think the underdog won that fight, was Shogun Mishita. I think Shogun beat Mishita that fight, and it was definitely a bad decision. But the moment, because remember at that time, Mishita had that aura of like being untouchable, like nobody can punch him in the face. Like, what do you do against him? And Shogun came out and arguably won the first round. I thought he did, which is why I think he won the fight. But he won the first round, and Rogan was so completely blown away that Shogun had landed a punch and was doing better that he and Goldberg proceeded to talk for the rest of the fight as if this is like a clear 50-45 decision. And that was one of the few times where I'll admit I was kind of – and my bias towards Shogun also helps. He's maybe my second favorite fighter of all time. But that also like kind of swayed things from my perception. When I rewatched it, I gave Mishita rounds 2 and 3 and Shogun 1, 4, and 5. But yeah, they were just ignoring everything Mishita was landing and just completely overblowing whatever Shogun was doing. That's I think always been Rogan's main problem, other than really loving him some BJ Penn. So just back to BJ Penn really quickly. Yeah, he's definitely underachieved. He's definitely the most overrated fighter of all time. Maybe Dan Henderson gives him a run for his money. But there's no fighter whose losses people have struggled to accept the way they did for BJ Penn. At least when Dan Henderson loses, he loses. Like, okay, whatever. Even some of his wins, people say, should be losses. A lot of them, actually. But BJ Penn, there's just this perception, like, oh, unmotivated, whatever, you know, the usual excuses. But it's not just that. A lot of them were like, okay, how did he lose? Remember how close people thought the St. Pierre rematch would be? And look, I don't blame anybody, to be clear, because their first fight was very close. But St. Pierre had gotten so much better at that point. Even, I'm not saying, when I say people, I'm including myself, because to me, even today, one of the most like eye-opening experiences of my MMA fandom at the time while watching was seeing Georges St-Pierre pass his guard. Like, the moment he passed BJ's guard, I was like, wait, what? Like, I mean, his guard is supposed to be unpassable. Like, you can't do anything about it. That's what we've always been told. And then when he started beating him up, and all of a sudden, the most bullshit excuse of all time emerges after the fight.
He was greasy.
Dude, remember how unbearable? I don't know if you used to read the forums at the time.
I was on Twitter, the underground. Really a big thing. Yeah, I was on the underground forums a lot.
I never had an account, but I used to follow the Sherdog forums. And for that fight, I remember I went to the underground to see, you know, what people were saying. And I've never, ever seen a fan base in any sport, and I'm literally not exaggerating when I say this, be as unbearable as BJ Penn fans were with excuses out of that fight. And then, of course, there's the iconic testimony.
He got his mom to testify for him.
That was something else. Her saying, like, and I sat there watching in horror, wondering, why can't my son defend himself? And my favorite part is, I don't remember who it was, but a person from the commission was like, ma'am, we understand your sentiments as a mother. However, that is not what you're saying. You're horrified, wondering why your son can't defend yourself, doesn't prove anything. He's fighting another hand-to-hand combatant. Like, yeah, this shit happens sometimes. So getting his mom to testify. There are a few fighters that have, despite being super good, like, one thing about BJ Penn, like, he's elite. There is no doubt about that. But that have kind of, like, embarrassed themselves in worse ways than BJ Penn, which is why it's really annoying to see him fight still. Like, I've softened up on him throughout the years, mainly because he's no longer relevant. But it's just sad. Like, why is this guy still fighting? And on top of that, though, even though I've softened up on him, I have to bury him for this, he has the audacity to call out fighters nowadays who fight for the money. Like, dude, you were born in a super rich family, all right? And you've made money from MMA. It's easy for you to say and criticize. Notice how it's always the people with the money that criticize other people for wanting money.
Yeah, we talked about with Ronda Rousey and her saying she doesn't fight for the money, which is easy to say. Did? Yeah, we did.
I buried Ronda for so many reasons I've lost track, but I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's easy to say that when you're making $3 million for a fight. It's easy to say you don't fight for the money, and you've made millions off of fighting. When you've got these guys who are making, you know, $25,000 to show and then to win, like, you need to fight for the money. Otherwise, fuck, you're an idiot.
Exactly. And so BJ Penn, who was rich way before MMA, and probably, like, compared to how probably the amount of money he made in MMA hasn't really changed his life in any way. He's just born in a rich family. I know he always had that image. I remember one of the Dana White quotes about BJ Penn's, like, oh, he'll fight you in your backyard just to prove he's better than you. Like, okay, look, just I scrap. Admire that attitude. What's that?
The just scrap motto.
Just scrap, exactly.
I have that. I actually have that.
How can I forget?
What? Go ahead.
Do you remember when he tweeted at John Fitch, when John Fitch failed at drug test? He was like, you pussy, I became a world champion on a diet of beer and hot dog. Like, is that really something to brag about? BJ Penn, what a, well, at least, you know what, at least he's a personality, though. I'll give him that. He's going to get destroyed.
I want to see BJ Penn win this fight.
Yeah, whatever. I'll be like, honestly, sure, let him win.
I don't think he will. If he does, if BJ Penn wins, should Yair Rodriguez just retire?
Okay,
just go into another line of work.
But what about all the money he's given up?
If he can't beat BJ Penn, he's not making any money.
I actually want to revise one thing about it. I said destroyed. I think he'll get dominated. I don't know. Maybe he won't get destroyed.
Yeah, I don't know if he gets destroyed. I think he loses a pretty
convincingly. Decision.
Yeah. I don't know if Yair Rodriguez finishes him.
Yeah, that's my thing. And it says more about Rodriguez than BJ. It's just like, I don't know if he's got, like, good yeah, punching.
He's not much of a finisher, honestly.
Yeah, so that's why destroyed might be an overstatement. Then again, if BJ does get destroyed, it's like it's really not surprising in any way because he's old as hell. How old is BJ Penn?
39.
I wish Mike Goldberg were covering this event so he could call him Baby J at 39. Even though Baby J is supposed to stand for his name, I don't care. Just him saying Baby J when BJ's 39 is pretty fantastic.
The co-main event is Marcin Held, the progeny of Polish MMA, Marcin Held, and against Joe Lozon. So two prodigies on this card.
Well, it's not going to be a good night for Prada. Or maybe it will be. I don't even know how good Joe
Lozon is. How old do you think Joe Lozon is?
34.
32.
Oh. That still doesn't feel nearly old enough.
Yeah,
that
guy's hasn't Joe Lozon forever. Been around forever?
How is he only 32? And you know what? Honestly, the only reason I said 34, I fully expected him to be even older. But because you asked me that question, I figured, like, okay, he's probably not going to be as old as I think. That's why I went 34. And when I went 34, in my estimation, it was, like, too low. He's 32?
He's 32.
Do you think he's going to be able to handle the Polish prodigy?
I don't know. Like, I kind of like Marcin Held. I've liked him ever since I've watched him in Bellator. I think he's a good fighter. The fact that he just lost to Diego Sanchez kind of says, like, yeah. I think it'll be a fun fight, though. Like, Joe Lozon usually is involved in these.
Yeah, he brings it. Yeah. He does bring it. In like, one thing about Joe Lozon, he was never, like, really good. At no point anybody mistook him for being somebody who's really good. But he's dependable. Like, you can count on him to put on a good fight.
I feel like we've done this before with Joe Lozon, but he's been in the UFC since 2006 when he knocked out Jens Pulver and prevented Lil Eagle from soaring again. How much do you think Joe Lozon made in his last fight? He's been in the UFC 10 years now.
55?
Total, or 55 to show and then 55 to win?
Did he win his last fight?
No, he lost his last fight to Jim Miller.
Okay, I'm going 55 total.
Joe Lozon, 54. Good job.
Oh, that's close. I'm good.
That is still not a lot of money for someone who's been doing this for 10 years.
No, that is not a lot of money for anybody. Hold on, though. $54,000 for one night's work?
I was about to make the same joke.
I don't know how good Joe Lozon is. So, I mean, he did lose to Jim Miller in his last. I'm going with a Polish prodigy.
I'll go with Joe Lozon. I think Jim Miller is better than Diego Sanchez at this point.
If I based my prediction on
although Diego Sanchez beat Jim Miller early last year, so shit, what do
who
I
knows?
Know?
Basically, yeah. complete mystery. Yeah, still going with the Polish prodigy. One of the prodigies have to win.
Court McGee against Ben Saunders. I like this fight. I've always liked Court McGee and Ben Saunders.
Because he's Liddell's guy. Come on.
Yeah, Court McGee is Liddell's guy. I've always liked Ben Saunders, though. He's not Liddell's guy. I've just liked him.
First of all, I think we both mean Liddell, not Liddell.
Okay.
Did you hear that? Oh, you didn't get... Didn't you watch the Mike
Goldberg
video?
Yeah, the Goldberg video. I got it. It just wasn't that memorable compared to all of Goldberg's other fuck-ups.
Oh, dude. No, Chuck Liddell. It's just... No, it is hilarious. Come on. Yeah, of course. Compared to everything else, it was fine, but yeah.
Anyway. Oh, I know why I like Ben Saunders. I was trying to remember why I like him.
Okay.
He knocked out Marcus Davis, and I was so fucking happy because I hated Marcus Davis.
That is Marcus Davis is pretty obnoxious. I remember, like Dan Hardy was supposed to be the douchebag, and he made him look like less insufferable. Remember when he wished AIDS upon him, and he was like so outraged because Dan Hardy made fun of his Irish heritage or something? Jesus Christ, what a moron!
Yeah, because Marcus Davis, like, I hated him, and then Mike Swick beat him, but it was – he didn't do much. And then Dan Hardy beat him, but that was
– Ben Saunders, I think, crushed him.
Yeah, he killed him with a knee in the clinch, and I was so happy. And so ever since that moment, I liked Ben Saunders.
Kill a bee.
Kill a bee. How old do you think Ben Saunders is? And Court McGee, for that matter.
Court McGee, I would say, is 32. Ben Saunders is, like, 38.
33.
What?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
He's only 33?
Yep.
Okay, I got it. He wasn't he on some very early season of The Ultimate Fighter?
No earlier than Joe Lozon.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He was on the Hughes and Sarah season. Yeah, the Penn and Pulver season was before Hughes and Sarah, wasn't it?
Yeah, way before.
Yeah.
Penn Pulver was the best season ever, by the way.
Yeah, it was.
But not just in terms of definitely in terms of quality of fighters. I don't think it's even close. But in terms of entertainment, remember the ping pong match?
That's still the best. Like, I remember watching – that was how I started with 411, as I covered that season for them. And I remember watching that. And every time I had to cover an Ultimate Fighter season, every time the coach's challenge came up, like, I always got so excited because – I based everything off of that ping pong match, and just nothing lived up to it. Everything else was just such a letdown after that. And I was like, oh, well, this is okay, but fuck that ping pong match between Penn and Pulver.
BJ getting super competitive. Jens Pulver beat him, right? Like, I think he lost the first match and then beat him in the next two.
I'll have to look that up, but it's possible.
BJ was getting competitive and pissed, and Jens Pulver suddenly turned into some Chinese Olympian. it was great entertainment, and the guys were in the house and just cheering. That was a really good season. Dude, that season gave us Do You Know Who I Am, Bro?
Yeah, it was it gave us Monster Lobster and the Gabe Rudiger open weight tournament bitch made grand prix.
Dude, so many Gabe Rudiger collapsing in the sauna. Monster Lobster, that street fight.
Yeah, the
brutal
street fight with the technical triangle.
Dude, somebody went for like a flying armbar and he got his head smashed on the concrete or something.
Yeah.
It was, what a season. Nate Diaz not refusing to back off from Carl Parisian. The atrocity that is Manny Gambarian. It was a good season. The best fighters didn't... Oh, Nate Diaz won that season.
Yeah, Nate Diaz won. The best fighter.
No, I was going to say the best fighters didn't win, but that is not true. And he was fighting Ray Maynard in the finale, right?
No, he fought...
Caro's
cousin, Gambarian.
Oh, he fought Gambarian.
Yeah, Gambarian blew out his knee going for a takedown.
Yeah, that's true. That was a good season. Ray Maynard turned at one point looked to be like the best guy to emerge out of the season when he was fighting Frankie Edgar for the title and stuff. Turns out it was Nate Diaz, which is fair. But yeah, so many good fighters all that season.
I think Ben Saunders beats Court McGee.
I'm gonna go with Chuck's guy. Actually, I'm going with Court McGee.
Okay. And then John Moraga against Sergio Pettis. I actually like the three undercard fights on this, maybe because I've heard of all these guys.
Yeah, that helps. I'm going with Moraga, though. I don't think Sergio Pettis is very good.
I don't think Sergio Pettis is very good either. I'm going with Moraga. The prelim fights all suck, except for Amanda Nunes' girlfriend is fighting on one of the prelims.
Oh, wait, her girlfriend is actually a fighter?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Nice.
Okay.
I don't know if she's any good. Her record is 6-5, so that kind of tells me she's not.
She should walk out to the weigh-ins wearing a lioness mask. Then we'll know who's the balls in the relationship.
No one knows who she is because the UFC doesn't fucking promote the fact that Nunes is in a relationship with her.
they don't promote the fact that Nunez exists. that's a start. They should have started with that.
I hope she wins, though. I like Amanda Nunez, so I'm going to
assume... Oh, I like Amanda Nunez, so I'm hoping her girlfriend wins. Yeah. Yes.
So that's a UFC Fight Night 103.
Our breakdown for the prelims are fantastic. We hope Amanda Nunez's girlfriend wins. Moving on.
No one's heard of these fucking people on the prelims.
I'm not going through Come that. But who knows? We should always go through the prelims. You know why?
To I pick fighters based on names?
Yes, so that one day, 3 years later, we can make fun of picking...
Marcus Conor Brimage McGregor's over opponent. Conor McGregor.
Yeah, Conor McGregor's opponent because we'd heard of him.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that. It was Conor McGregor versus some...
Brimage.
Oh, Marcus Brimage. And it was like, yeah, well, you said, we'll go with Marcus Brimage because I've heard of him. And I was like, yeah, sure.
We can't do that because I legit have not heard of anybody on these prelims.
Oh, then, okay, in that case, that's fair enough. All right. So we should always pick fights as long as there's somebody on the prelims we're aware of.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. So hopefully we'll have another golden Conor McGregor moment in 3 years.
We have one more thing to talk about before we wrap this up.
We do?
Yes. This is my special treat to you.
Oh, okay.
The World MMA Awards.
Ariel Helwani just admitted. So a journalist admitted to be on the Zuffa payroll, and he's getting nominated. Dude, how much of a joke is this?
We're gonna read off the nominees, and we're gonna pick our winners.
We're gonna get predictions.
Yes,
I love this. All right, I'm hype. I was honestly cringing before you told me what the trait was, but I'm happy. I never should have doubted you.
The Charles Mask Lewis Fighter of the Year. The nominees are Michael Bisping, Donald Cerrone, Cody Garbrandt, Conor McGregor, and Stipe Miocic.
Amanda Nunez is even nominated? Jesus.
Because you'll see why.
Oh, I mean, the reason. Yeah,
there's a female fighter of the year.
I guess Bisping and Conor are the only ones with even a shot at winning this. I'll go with Conor. I think they're going to give it to Conor. Well, Conor is my choice, but we're predicting who they're going to give it for, right? We're not saying who we'd go for.
We can do both, who we'd go for and who we think they'll give it to.
Okay, I mean, we talked about our own awards last week. I think they're giving it to Conor.
I think they're giving it to Conor as well. I agree with you. I would probably give it to Bisping.
Oh, no, I said Conor is my pick as well.
Oh, okay. Well, I give it to Bisping. I still hold the fact that Conor lost against him.
No, I'm with you. It's close, but I still think, like, him winning two titles, like, that's a big deal. And I still don't think Bisping should have beaten Silva. I mean, he won legitimately the decision, but Silva was being an idiot. So, anyway.
Female Fighter of the Year. Chris Cyborg, Angela Hill, Joanna Yeon Jacek, Angela Lee, and Amanda Nunes.
Yeah, I don't think that's even close.
Yeah, like Nunes wins in a landslide. Breakthrough Fighter of the Year. Yair Rodriguez. There's
breakthrough fighters?
Yeah,
okay.
Breakthrough fighter. Yair Rodriguez, Cody
Garbrandt. Hold on. So do the awards take place before or after Yair Rodriguez's fight with BJ?
It takes place after. The awards are March 2nd.
Oh, it would be hilarious if he wins it, if he gets voted. It's like when Dirk won the MVP.
He's not winning this once you hear the nominees.
Oh, okay.
Yair Rodriguez, Cody Garbrandt, Duho Choi, Derek Lewis, and Michael Page. Garbrandt's winning this.
He won the title, so yeah.
There's no chance that Garbrandt loses this. Here's the dumbest award they have.
Okay.
International.
And it's not Journalist of the Year.
Do what?
And it's not Journalist of the Year.
No. International Fighter of the Year. Isn't this award stupid? Considering here are the nominees. Michael Bisping, Joanna Yeon Jacek, Conor McGregor, Gegard Mousasi, and Khabib Nurmagomedov. So three of these are nominated for Fighter of the Year.
So it would be fantastic if, like, Bisping wins Fighter of the Year, but Conor wins International Fighter of the Year or something. Like, how dumb is that? Plus, it's not like MMA is not a sport. Like, dude, half the sport, at least at one point, was consisted of, like, Brazilians, at least the good fighters. So there was a time where, like, every UFC champion was a Brazilian. You're really going to give International Fighter of the Year. Like, that's a dumb award. I agree. I would go with just because it's called International Fighter Award, I would go with Conor because of his impact with Ireland and everything. I don't know. It's just arbitrary if we're attempting to differentiate.
I'm going with Khabib because it's a dumb award. And he deserves it.
Fair enough.
Fight of the Year. Lawler and Condit, Swanson and Choi, Bisping and Silva, Conor and Nate 2, and Chandler and Benson Henderson.
Swanson and whoever.
Swanson and Choi, yeah.
Yeah, that was a great fight.
All those fights are good. It feels like Bisping and Silva shouldn't be in that same category.
Oh, no. Bisping and Silva's there? Jesus, yeah. That's a stretch. I think they'll give it to Conor and Diaz too, by the way.
I think they will too.
Choi is my choice, but they'll give it to a recognizable fight.
Knockout of the Year. Anthony Johnson over Glover Teixeira.
Never seen it.
You watched Diaz and Conor too, didn't you? You watched that whole card?
Yeah.
Yeah, Anthony Johnson. I've seen it.
Never mind. You're right. I've seen it.
Lando Venata against John McDessie. That was the wheel kick knockout.
Yeah.
Michael Page against Cyborg. That was the flying knee. Did you see the gif of that?
That was brutal.
That one was good. Yair Rodriguez and Andre Fili. That was the just the jumping kick. And Michael Chandler and Pitbull, which was just a straight right that just cracked him. And that one sounded really bad. Probably Venata and McDessie.
I'll go with the spinning wheel kick, but these are always difficult.
Like, yeah.
Unless you have something like when Anderson knocked out Vitor, like something super flashy and in a high profile fight.
But yeah, that's the one thing with these fights. Like, they're good knockouts. None of them are really that high profile.
Significant.
Fights,
yeah, they're just really cool looking, but the impact is minimal.
Yeah.
So I'll go with the coolest looking one, spinning wheel kick. Oh, that flying knee, I loved it when I saw it.
It was great. And he cracked his skull legitimately.
Poor Tito.
Submission of the Year, Rothwell over Barnett. Diaz over McGregor.
They're giving it Diaz over Connor. I'm just ending this right now, but continue with the
Tate over Holm. That's my pick. I still like that submission a lot. Mackenzie.
That's Dern. A really good one.
Mackenzie Dern over Montana Stewart. I don't know what that is. And Thiago Moises over David Cotillo.
Did you say Rothwell?
Yeah, Rothwell when he choked out Barnett with a guillotine.
Remember Ben Rothwell.
Yeah, remember I texted you? I was like, dude, Ben Rothwell choked out Josh Barnett.
That is my vote. That gets my vote. Autumn, never seen it, but this is getting my vote.
Was that the You've Seen Nothing Yet promo afterwards?
Was that this year? Because that's my MMA moment of the year. I don't think that was this year. Was that this year?
I'm Googling it.
Hold on, I'm Googling this. Yeah. What, the greatest moment, seriously.
Oh, no, that was 2015.
I figured that was the longer. That was after Matt Mitrione.
Yeah, I see that now. Yeah, they'll give it to Diaz McGregor. I think Tate over Holm deserves it.
Yeah, they'll definitely give it to Diaz over Connor.
Comeback of the Year. Michael Bisping against Anderson Silva, I guess coming back from getting knocked down.
Yeah.
Nate Diaz over Conor McGregor. What did he come back from? A close first round?
No. He was getting beat up.
First round? No. That first round was so much closer than people want to say it was.
Oh, I agree, but like... Okay, let's be clear. I think he was down two rounds when he submitted him. But
how was he down two
think...
rounds? It was only a two-round fight.
Oh, he was round, sorry. One round and, like, he was losing the round until he got submitted. Basically, my point is, whatever punishment he endured does not warrant the label comeback. There wasn't that much to come back from.
Dan Henderson and Hector Lombard. Yeah, I guess Henderson was getting tagged in that fight. Tate and Holm, that's my pick. Oh, actually,
that is an easy choice, dude.
Well, the last one is Dominic Cruz career. That one's pretty good too. It's
Dominic Cruz. Yeah. It's Dominic Cruz.
Upset of the year: Bisping over Rockhold. It's tough to go against that one. These other fighters I've never heard of. So Bisping over Rockhold's definitely going to get that. Sean Tompkins, coach of the year. Jason Perillo, Dean Thomas, John Kavanaugh, Marcus Marinelli, and Greg Jackson. Going with Edmund.
I don't know. Who's the coach of the year?
I have no clue. Greg Jackson will win, or Kavanaugh will win.
Give it to Greg Jackson, because whatever.
Trainer of the year. I don't know who these guys are.
How is that any different?
Mike Dolce will win because fuck, people.
Oh, we're talking Mike. Trainer. Yeah, okay. Does everybody know anything of any trainer other than Mike Dolce?
Well, there's a couple of strength and conditioning coaches, and then there's another nutritionist like Dolce.
Whatever.
Gym of the year. Top Team, SBG, Ireland, Jackson Wink, aka, and Team Alpha Male.
Whatever Edmund's gym where Rhonda and Travis Brown train is.
Rhonda Brown exclusive.
I guess Jackson Winkle. I don't know. It's hard to pick.
Referee of the year. Herb Dean's gonna win. Best in the business.
That's a dumb award, by the way.
Has any referee had a good year? Like, how do you determine if a referee has a good year? Has any referee
ever had a good year in MMA? Like, are you seriously going to go through all their performances and assess when they made a good stoppage battle? Like, that is so dumb. Forget about it.
Ring card girl of the year.
Can it get any dumber? Like, what, the way she walks, the way she holds the cards?
The way she looks.
With world-renowned professional artist, Brittany Palmer. Is she still a ring card girl?
Yeah, the nominees are Ariane, Brittany, Mercedes Terrell, Carly Baker, and Jenny Andrade.
I only know two of those girls, and I can't stand Ariane, so I'll go with Brittany.
I'm going with Jenny Andrade based on this picture they used of her.
Oh, well, that's fair. Which one did Lorenzo ask, what are you up to tonight?
Oh, that was... Shit. It was none of these girls.
That's unfortunate.
I forgot her name.
That is one of my favorite MMA occurrences ever, by the way.
It was fantastic. I'm Googling it because I really want to know who it was.
For those who don't know...
Chrissy Lorenzo Blair is who it is.
Oh, okay. Lorenzo Fertitta once accidentally tweeted what was clearly meant to be a DM... where he's asking Chrissy Blair, what are you up to tonight? And it was like midnight when he tweeted it. So, yeah. And then he deleted it quickly. Lorenzo Fertitta is a married man, to be clear.
Lita.
But then again, he could be just asking her, what are you up to tonight? Because they need to have a very important business meeting about her ring carding.
Leading man, Dana White, who's going to win. Scott Coker, who should win. Victor Coy, Mark Ratner, and holy shit, Jeff Nowitzki. Give it to fucking Jeff Nowitzki. The sure, smell test, a.k.a. the eye test. The only way to truly judge if a fighter is juiced. The most intangible test you can possibly think of. That's the first time we've had that joke on this show, and that's why Samer is losing it. Because it's actually been a while. We haven't talked about it since it got brought up last week when we talked about it. So. Last week, off air, by the way, in our personal conversations. No one's going to get this, and people are just going to be like, why is this so funny to this guy?
One person might.
He drops the newness tonight. Get ready for 30 text messages tonight to wake up to. You know that's the best part of your Friday morning is waking up to my millions of text messages and you know exactly what they are.
I might get up very early Friday morning because I have a breakfast with the lady. So, yeah, send away. But, yeah, that is actually – it's funny because – well, typically when I wake up to text, it's either something has happened, something, like, wacky in the world of sports or whatever, or OKC Thunder, or if it's all caps, that's my favorite part. If I'm seeing all caps, then I know it's great. And it's the most amount of messages as well.
Yeah. It's fantastic. I'm so hype. It's the best part of my Thursday nights is laying in bed and reading it and sending you the text messages and trying not to wake up my fiance who's sleeping next to me while I'm cracking up laughing.
Sounds like we both need a life. Anyway.
Two. Personality of the year. Rogan, Jimmy Smith, John Anik, Matt Serra, Brendan Schaub.
Matt Joe Rogan. Serra? Seriously, Matt Serra?
Yeah, he has his own podcast, so he's the personality.
I'm going with Joe Rogan. This year he's been doing things.
Analyst of the year, Brian Stann, Dan Hardy, Robin Black, whoever that is, Chael Sonnen.
Oh, Jesus, dude. Robin Black is that Canadian emo-looking guy. He is garbage.
Okay.
He is garbage. Dude, oh, my. That dude is ugh. They seriously nominated that guy?
Yeah. I've never heard of him.
He gets my vote, but continue.
Okay. Chael Sonnen and Dominic Cruz. I'll go with Cruz. I think he's really smart.
I think they're going to give it to Brian Stann, but I'll go with Cruz.
Best MMA programming. UFC Embedded, the institution known as the Ultimate Fighter. Looking for a Fight, the MMA Hour, and UFC Breakdown. I actually like the Embedded series. Like, that's actually good.
Yeah, I think it's the only thing on that list worth a damn, so, yeah.
Media source of the year, MMA Junkie, Fighting, Bloody Elbow, Sure Dog, or Flow Combat?
I have a question. Let's say a website wins this. Does it become like a feather in their cap? Like, oh, two-time media source of the year? Like,
probably,
really?
Yes. It definitely does, dude. As fucking... As MMA is, of course it does.
You know what? Whoever wins any of these awards should deliver a speech and go like, without MMA, you'll only be left with Hollywood, which is not an art.
I guarantee...
And then Hollywood is going to go crazy.
I guarantee someone says that, and I guarantee no one in Hollywood will give a single fuck.
You're absolutely wrong. I can totally see Ben Affleck, Who else? Like, give me some celebrity names.
Half the people, like, that everywhere. Own the UFC that have a stake in the
UFC.
Yeah,
but Affleck is an owner, right? Aren't all the Boston guys?
Yeah,
owners?
Affleck, Damon, Conan, like all these people have stake in Wahlberg.
Yeah, they're gonna go crazy. Meryl Streep is gonna issue
a statement,
a rebuttal. Like it's. Donald Trump is going to give his confidence and vote of confidence to the UFC and add to their criticism of Hollywood. This is going to start a civil war. A Hollywood versus MMA civil war. That should be our next program since we ditched the Four Horsemen thing. Which is very unfortunate because that was legit. But we need to come up with a MMA versus Hollywood war.
I'm totally fine with this. I can't wait to read your ideas and your messages on these.
I already have one, The Expendables.
Oh, nice. I love that movie.
I bet you do. I shockingly don't think you're joking.
Not quite as good as the Fast and Furious franchise, but still pretty
good. Oh, God, I hate you.
MMA clothing and equipment brand of the year. Reebok is not nominated. I can't buy these awards. If you don't nominate Reebok.
Wait, what? Is Reebok seriously not nominated?
Yeah, Hayabusa, Bad Boy, Virus, Everlast, and Venom.
I go with Bad Boy because they remind me of Shogun when he won the UFC title. And that has a very special place in my heart. So my Shogun bias makes me vote for Bad Boy.
And Journalist of the Year.
Uh-huh. Now we're talking. Finally.
Karim Zidane. Ben Folks,
Ooh.
Brett, I don't know, Brett Akamoto, Sean Alashadi, and Ariel Hawani.
Ariel gets my vote because he deserves it. He cried on his own podcast.
Ariel is going to win because I feel like he's won every single year.
He has, and he deserves it. He absolutely deserves it. He admitted to being on the UFC payroll, and he cried on his own podcast. And according to Dana White, his kids are going to see this one day. Ariel should win. He deserves it. He put his blood, sweat, and literal tears in this. He's going to win.
What a stupid fucking thing the MMA awards are. I hate all award shows, like, legitimately. I think they're all dumb.
I mean, you're the one that just made us spend some 10 to 15 minutes talking about this.
Yeah, to bury it, because that's what we do on this podcast. We bury shit.
Fair enough.
Next week we will be talking about, I'm going to make sure it's next week that we're going to be talking about this. Hold on one second. Should have been more prepared. But what good is that, being prepared? It is. Next week we will be previewing the greatest fight of all time.
Oh, okay. Now we're talking.
Yes. And the greatest fight of all time, for those that don't know, is going to be Tito Ortiz against Chael Sonnen at Bellator 170. Meryl Streep will be in attendance. Mike Goldberg will hopefully be on the call. And it's just going to be... it's going to be fantastic. There's no other way to put it. I hope they have one more press conference.
If they don't, it's a disappointment.
It really is.
They really would have dropped the ball.
So we'll do that next week. We'll also review this UFC card. And thanks, everybody, for joining us. We will see you right back here on the podcast.